Okay, good morning everyone and welcome to today's Police, Fire and Rescue Board meeting. Order of business as per the agenda. Do we have any apologies? Councillor McCall.
Thank you, Chair. Apologies from Councillor Parry.
Thank you. And any declarations of interest? Okay, item four, that moves us on to the minutes, pages 3 to 6. Are we happy to proceed with the minutes? Okay. That takes us on to public reports, item 5.1, flight up in Midlothian. And I believe Adele's going to speak to this. Adele.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, everyone. This report is to inform board members of the enforcement powers which exist under the Environmental Protection Act to deal with fly tipping. Fly tipping as an offence is defined in paragraph 2.1 of the report, and it is, in effect, the illegal dumping of waste. This, of course, varies significantly from perhaps just one bag of household rubbish to many tonnes or indeed organised dumping. Paragraph 2.2 of the report indicates the persons who may issue fixed penalty notices under the Act, and in relation to further enforcement, fines can amount to up to £40,000. SEPA have fairly recently been, in terms of a legislative change, granted enforcement undertakings to allow environmental offenders to correct their behaviour and to make amends. These aren't officially available to local authorities at this point in time. Now, Midlothian Council deals with incidents of fly tipping in a variety of ways, and these are listed at paragraph 3.3 of the report. There are a number of stages we go through in relation to these. The first thing is, if the individual who has dumped the waste can be identified, they get an opportunity to collect the fly-tipped material. This is very similar to the enforcement undertaken, which is in statute for SEPA. The second option is for us to issue a fixed penalty notice, or the third is a referral to the Crown Office Procurator Fiscal Service with a view to prosecution. In addition to this, Midlothian Council will remove fly-tipping, which has been dumped in terms of or on public ground locations. Now, fly tipping on private ground is a different issue, and it is discussed in paragraph 3.4 of the report. Fly tipping becomes on private ground becomes the responsibility of the landowner, and landowners should note that if they remove fly tipping without disposing of it correctly, they then conduct an offence of fly tipping. And in terms of the EPA, the Environmental Protection Act referred to earlier, landowners can be required to remove fly tipping. So, as we move forward, what are we currently trying to do in relation to fly tipping? 4.1 lists the things which are currently happening or which we plan to try and take forward in relation to dealing with the issue, because it would appear that the incidence of fly tipping continue to increase and continue to grow. The report lays out in paragraph 5.1 the resources which are currently available to environmental health in relation to this matter. And there is a issue in relation to the increasing demand, either because of a growing population or because of growing instance of fly tipping, which may arise from out with Midlothian, or the perpetrator may arise from out with Midlothian, versus the restricted resource which we have in terms of field staff and the authority. The 5.2 risks, lists the risks, and it is, I think, widely accepted that fly tipping leads to further fly tipping. So if fly tipping occurs in an area, it can rapidly be followed by more. The situation deteriorates rapidly. The local authorities seek in that regard to try and move fly tipping from public ground within as short a space of time as possible. But if we're trying to gather evidence in relation to prosecution or feral or fixed penalty notices, it may be required to stay there for a number of days before it can be moved. The recommendations of this report are listed at paragraph 6, Chair, and I'll leave members to have a read of those and happy to take any questions.
Okay. Thanks very much, Adele. This report really asked Adele to bring the report forward to the board as a result of a community planning meeting that took place a few weeks ago at the Lone Head Centre. There was some confusion as to who fly tipping incidents should be reported to, who should deal with the mess of fly-tipping and who would subsequently investigate any evidence trail as and when it arises. So this is how this report came forward. Does anyone have any comments or questions?
Just to say, fly-tipping, the incidences of fly-tipping range from something that's a kind of unsightly nuisance to something that's really serious. I mean, I represent one of the areas, wards with quite an extensive rural element to them, and others will know this as well. They'll be the same. I mean, we get a lot of fly-tipping, and I've spotted myself on about three occasions now considerable piles of asbestos lying, sheets of asbestos lying, and we've had to get specialists to come in and move it. So you range from a cardboard box for your rubbish for your house to something as significant as that, clearly being done by a business. I'm interested to the point that you're making, Adele, about the it's obviously not always people from Midlothian. Over the years, of the people who have been caught, fined, identified, or whatever, do we have any indication of what that sort of percentage is in terms of those that are in Midlothian as opposed to out with? And also, there's mention somewhere here in the report about looking into the possibility of CCTV and the hotspots. I think that's something we really need to seriously look at, because I think we need to, I know we've got limited resources in terms of enforcement officers and things like that, but to be able to actually provide evidence or dumping where we've got particular problems, I think would be invaluable. And we really do need to try to catch some of the more serious ones, the tyre ones, for example, that are all over our area. We have to have examples and publicise examples of people being caught. And I would also ask the question about what's the potential of naming and shaming in terms of catching people illegally dumping in our areas.
Thanks, Jim.
Thank you. I'll take those in order. In terms of the exact percentage split of people, I'm afraid I don't have that with me, but I can get back to you in relation to that. However, what I would say is when we investigate the actual area where the fly-tipping has occurred, it falls into two types of things. There's the builder's rubble, the tyres, that type of stuff, which I'll hesitate to say never, because we have once managed, but we rarely find any evidence in relation to that as to who the perpetrators are. Although on occasion, particularly with tyres, we suspect who they may be, but of course suspecting doesn't take us to prosecution. However, in relation to the dumped bags of household rubbish, there are a fairly large percentage of those that are Midlothian residents. So that's that point. In relation to the CCTV, I fully accept what you say in relation to that. And actually, at this point in time, we are about to install some temporary CCTV at one particular hotspot to try and ascertain what effect that has. We know we had a particularly bad site before that we put CCTV on. Like it was fly tipping on an industrial basis, really, a few years ago, back maybe 7-8 years ago. We put CCTV on that. That moved it effectively. I would say it stopped it from that particular location, but things then started to appear in other rural areas where it hadn't been happening before. So there's a cautionary thing with CCTV in that we just don't want to deflect it. But as I say, we are currently in the process of putting CCTV up at one particular location to determine how that resolves. And I think we have two particular issues which are known just now for fly tipping. One is very much on public land, where we have a sort of lesser resource or lesser ability really there in terms of the local authority. But I think we've been in discussions with the landowners there about them putting up some CCTV there. Sorry, your third point. I didn't write it down. Apologies. The potential for us to get. If I could just inform the board. Pardon?
Naming and shaming was the last point.
Yes, the potential to name and shame. If I could inform the board, we looked at naming and shaming before in relation to fixed penalties for dog fouling, and we were told that we couldn't name and shame in relation to fixed penalty issues or for the environmental impact clean-up that we allow people to do. We can't name or shame for that. If, however, we are successful in managing to get a case to the courts, then that would have been in the public domain, and I would see no issue as to why we shouldn't be able to name and shame there. And without going into too much detail, and I don't know perhaps if yourself would like to say anything further, but in relation to just now, we have been quite successful working in cooperation with the police, and we are very hopeful of being able to get a case referred to COPFS very soon. Indeed, I spoke to the Wildlife Fiscal last week in relation to the case. He also has a very keen interest in relation to environmental matters. And so far, our evidence appears to be quite beneficial. So I'm hopeful that case may come forward. Of course, it will take some time before it, if the Fiscal decides to take it, before it will get through any prosecution. But that would hopefully give us an opportunity in relation to naming and shaming.
Thanks, Adele. Any other questions or comments? Jim?
Just wondering if we were seriously, if we're going to go down the road of getting, not just temporarily, but purchasing some CCTV cameras, I'm wondering about, in the hotspots, being able to stick, you know, a signage up saying CCTV may be operating in this area, and because obviously if you want to catch them, you don't necessarily want to draw their attention to the CCTV, but, you know, in lots of the different areas where there's a regular occurrence, maybe putting signs up would make them avoid these locations at least. I know they maybe go somewhere else, but then the CCTV cameras could be put. I take it there's no requirement to put that up. You could be putting up CCTV without notices. No, you can't do that.
It's my understanding, I take it you would agree, that if you put up CCTV cameras that you must put up signage displaying the fact that there are cameras operating and whom you should speak to in relation to if you have any concerns or questions. But I don't think that's particularly detrimental to us. And actually, we have one, as I alluded to earlier, we have one site where there's quite a lot of tipping occurring on private ground. We're waiting on, there's a collection of landowners, there's three or four different people who own land within that pocket. We're waiting on them to clear off the fly tipping from it, and they've agreed to do that from their private ground, and then we're waiting to put the signs up. We've recently rebranded our signs. Sorry, I'm looking at yourself again. I've recently rebranded the signs so that they say Midlothian Council and Police Scotland in relation to them, to just add a bit of gravitas to them as well.
Thank you, Dale. Get it?
Yeah, just to come in on that, there are limitations regarding CCTV, and whilst you might want to go covert at all times, that requires RIPSA authorisation, which there are people in the council who have the ability to do that, but it needs to go through a legal process for it. I'm certainly a great believer in being overt anyway, being absolutely upfront that CCTV is in operation. I'm acutely aware of those who attend the farmers' meeting. It's one of the regular issues that's raised. I attend that every 6 months regarding the scale of the problem in terms of fly tipping within that rural environment. And whilst I am a supporter of CCTV, it has limitations within that rural area as well in terms of power sourcing and things, but it's nothing that's not insurmountable. I am also acutely aware of the amount of work that we are doing. We recognise it, that it's a growing issue. It's a growing issue throughout the country, I have to say. When you see some of the scale of the stuff that's happening down south, it's a matter of time probably before that replicates up here. So we do need to get in the front foot with it. And I think we've always spoke about potentially looking at doing a big comms message and trying to actually get the community on side in terms of, you know, trying to come forward. They are our eyes and ears, particularly in that remote area, and if they are seeing a van and things, to come forward, giving us that registration number. What I can say internally wise is I sought clarity because there's been a number of times and a number of queries, and I know it was raised at the community planning meeting regarding the police response to it, you know, with their ACR or area control room directing everybody towards the council. That is absolutely under review. I spoke with my counterpart within the ACR just last week, and I know there's new guidelines being brought up there. We do absolutely have the powers to deal with that under the Environmental Protection Act, and as I say, we're working very, very closely with the council in particular in trying to address this issue.
Thanks for that, Kenny. Yeah, that was one of the issues I was going to raise about reporting. It's probably one of the two questions I would have. Who would members of the public report instances of fly tipping to? Would it be CEPA, the council, or Police Scotland? And how would that be directed? Another question is that In terms of enforcement action, what's the process for deciding who would deal with that? Would it be SEPA? Would it be the local authority again with a fixed penalty? Or where there's evidence, would it be Police Scotland?
As we all know, there's a variety of agencies who the public can report to. The sort of most publicised one is Dum Dumpers, I think, which is it falls under the SEPA umbrella really, and a lot of people go via there, and they then put the information back out. I couldn't comment on how much information they send to the police forces in relation to that, but we certainly, as a local authority, get a significant amount of calls directly from Dum Dumpers. We also get people who contact us directly in relation to that. Sometimes there are private landowners who've discovered something on their own property and they're really looking, there's a misunderstanding there in terms of what then can happen or will happen in relation to that, but we just advise them in terms of taking that forward. So that's who they report to. My apologies, I didn't write. Who makes the decision in terms of right, okay. The split between SEPA and local authority, there is a protocol which exists which talks about the volume and quantity of materials that are dumped, and it sort of anecdotally boils down to a sort of van size becomes local authority, and if it's bigger than a van size, it tends to be SEPA who fall into that. The only split to that would be if it's affecting a watercourse directly, then SEPA will always involve in terms of a watercourse directly. It's perhaps something we maybe need to have a conversation about in terms of I'm not sure how the police filter things out for coming to us. And I think it's rare probably that we would send anything to Police Scotland in relation to calls that we have received, unless we thought there was some more organised crime or something behind it that we thought we needed to draw to their attention.
Kenny.
Yeah, I think that's a fair comment. I think certainly our view is that if it's ongoing, if it's a live incident, things and things come through, then absolutely we have primacy, but it will get a grading that's reflected accordingly, depending on the level of risk that's posed. Historic-wise, I think individuals will get reported through to your dumpers aspect or through the local authority aspects, but certainly if a crime is ongoing, yeah, then we have primacy and things for it, but what I will say is that it will not get like a grade 1, grade 2 response unless it was something horrendous that was taking place. I think in terms of that discussion, it's very much like the dog issue that we have. You know, is it a dangerous dog? Is it a dog out of control? Does it sit with the dog warden? Does it actually sit within primacy of Police Scotland? What I can say is that we do have healthy discussions and constructive discussions, and we will decide who is best to actually progress that.
Thanks, Kenny. The only other comment I would say is I did have a look at Dum Dumper's website last week. There's no mechanism where people or residents can report that anonymously. That's probably the only issue we'd raise with that. Is there a mechanism the council has for people to report it online?
People can report it online anonymously to us, but it's a bit like the dog fouling again, just reporting to us the fact that the presence of it is there. Really what we would ideally like is good information from the public about who the potential perpetrators may be. And actually the case that I referred to earlier, that we're obviously at the early stages of, but we're very hopeful on, is being backed up by excellent local resident knowledge and witness statements for us, because they actually saw the incident taking place. Because even if people ring us to say it's currently happening, or ring Police Scotland to say it's currently happening, it's over in a flash. By the time we get out there, it's gone. So people can report it anonymously, but that's simply just telling us of the presence. However, we still want to hear that, because as I alluded to earlier, fly tipping gets fly tipping, so it just grows and grows. So we want to try and action it and remove it as fast as possible if it's on public ground.
Thanks very much, Dale. Any other comments or questions? Councillor Smell.
Very much following on from Jim's comments about the Gorebridge area and bringing this alive. There was a lot of public interest when I stood for election and the problem of fly tipping. And one of the suggestions was that we should be encouraging people to use Stop Hill. It comes as a surprise to me that we have a major dumping site only a mile away from Stop Hill. So the argument there was if Stop Hill stayed open longer, then people wouldn't fly tip. Now, that's strenuously rejected by Ricky Moffat on the grounds that a lot of the fly tipping is organised and for payment and would make no difference at all. We then get to the problem with that particular site. It is a privately owned site, so there's nothing directly the council can do. then the private owner has to remove the fly-tipped materials, not knowing whether there's something illicit or illegal within the packaging. He then has to take it to Stob Hill. Is there anything we can do to create an interface between the amenity sites, the recycling sites, so that we can actually help the private landowner to dispose of this without facing potential penalties and give him some assistance?
I think perhaps I might need to take that away and have that discussion with Ricky and come back to you in relation to that.
Councillor Muirhead.
I was under the impression that there was cooperation, while it may not be official, but there was cooperation between the Stob Hill site and local landowners, farmers, etc., that if they had materials that they had, you know, they were allowed to put it into Stob Hill, even, you know, though they're technically not supposed to. I think there's an arrangement along these lines to help them to do that.
I understood there was in the past, and I can't comment whether it currently exists or not, but I think there was a mechanism whereby if those wishing to remove fly tip material had a specific booking at the civic amenity site, that they could turn up with it and it could be disposed of in that. I doubt if that has changed, but I'm not 100% certain, so I'd need to check with Ricky Moffat and come back to you on that.
Thank you, that's a helpful reply.
Yeah, thanks for that, Dale. If we could just get that clarified, that would be great. Any other questions or comments? Be happy to note the report and move on. Thank you, Adele. Okay, 5.2, Police Scotland. And just before we proceed, I would just like to take this opportunity on behalf of the Board to congratulate Chief Superintendent Clark on recently being awarded the Queen's Medal for Services to Police. Undoubtedly, you deserve this award, Leslie, as you continue to be or play an inspirational role and mentor to many. Also understand your role has now been made permanent, so congratulations. We look forward to working with the Board for years to come. Thank you. Welcome. 5.2.1, annual view of policing. Kevin.
Thank you, Chair. The letter has been circulated with the papers to members. This is from the Scottish Police Authority, specifically in terms of its annual review, and they are particularly seeking the insights of elected members on the scrutiny role of policing in local communities, and have provided a set of questions to which I've drafted a tentative response. Whether members want that changed or added to, we have until the 29th of June to make a submission. Previously, we've circulated this to all members, but this is specifically asking for the scrutiny role of the committee.
Thanks, Kevin. Members will see that Kevin's draft response on page 13 or 58. If there's any changes or amendments to that, as I say, we'll just be forwarded to yourself, Kevin, prior to the 29th of June, so we can conclude that. Any questions or comments? Okay. 5.2.2, Community Action Team. Get it?
Okay, thanks, Chair. Folks, firstly, an apology regarding the normal police report. But as members will be aware, just the end-of-year figures do take slightly longer in terms of ratification and the process that goes through, and it was only just last Wednesday before the figures were absolutely finally ratified by the SPA board. But if it's okay with members, I actually have the figures, which I'll verbalise and can thereafter formulate a written report, if that is in order. And I'll do that after I've done the MCAT report, if that's okay for members. Okay, just with regards to the Midlothian CAT team report, this is the final quarter of which you'll be aware that we had our first team up and running. We started in December of last year. So this is a kind of quarter report for MCAT 1, as we see. And you'll see within there a very productive 3 months that they've had in a whole variety of different activities throughout Midlothian, from drugs, bail curfews, licensing checks, high visibility obviously being their key one in terms of the deterrent in reducing antisocial behaviour, which you'll see when I give the verbal for the reports, have made a significant impact already regarding that, and a number of successes within there. In addition to a key aspect of the role is that community engagement part, actually engaging with our young people and with our communities within the different communities. I think it's fair to say they hit the ground running. There's plenty of work for them to do. They'll never ever be work shy, I have to say. And just in terms of the tasking process, so obviously we have our joint weekly partnership tasking in there. We have our monthly meetings in terms of the safer delivery groups, and then obviously there's the intelligence tasking that comes through for the police, of which I have primacy for every single morning in terms of what their functions regarding intelligence comes through. But I think it's fair to say they're a really, really proactive, very active and keen officers. They were handpicked for this role, and I'm certainly already seeing the difference that they're making within the communities of Midlothian, and I hope members are likewise. And I'm happy to take any questions anybody may have regarding the report or the funded officers in general.
Questions or comments? Councillor Muirhead.
Just a small point. This report, I think we've had this issue before, this report's marked restricted. Is that something that doesn't go on the public-facing website? Just that this is a public meeting that it's brought to? I'm just wondering about that.
Yeah, but it is marked restricted, but there's no need. We've now anonymised it and we stripped it back further just so we couldn't actually identify and take it to a particular case that may well be sub judice. So just for future-wise and things, I'll take that restricted markings off that so it sits within the council website. So any member of the public can view that.
Yeah, thanks for that. Jim?
That's helpful because I think that people need to see what they're paying for at the end of the day, which is good. I know that through discussions with local officers, we had particular problems in Newton Grange when the show ground was located there a few weekends ago, particularly on the Friday night. Discussing with officers, there appeared maybe to be a slight issue in terms of communication, that they weren't actually aware of the shows being there on the Friday, and I think there was a bit of a problem there. That certainly was highlighted to us with the officers we spoke to, but they were resolving that. It was just to draw your attention to it, because we were wondering, you know, we go through that licensing process for shows, and you know, I think it obviously goes to somewhere within the centre of the police, and not necessarily back at a local level in this instance. But what they did say was they targeted the CAT teams on that on the Saturday and Sunday and had very little issues. It's quite a sad thing that we have to have that number of police officers present when we've got a public event like that that a lot of people are going along to enjoy, and it's being disrupted by the activities of a few individuals. It's just unfortunately we're in that situation, but that is what happened. But you know, I think the fact we've got the CAT teams available made a big difference, because the response teams, while they would have dealt with immediate issues, certainly the view that we were getting, Kath Johnson and I met with them, was that they would have been struggling a bit without the CAT teams, unless, you know, I'm not saying they wouldn't have covered really serious aspects yet, but they would have struggled to provide the service that they provided if they hadn't had the CAT teams available. So it was pleasing to hear that kind of feedback.
Thanks, Jim.
Yeah, you're absolutely spot on, Jim, with regard to that. The issue about the licensing thing, that's lessons learned, I think, for both sides. In terms of that, just regarding the timing and making sure that licences are granted within the licensing time frame, which gives us all a wee bit of heads up, and also internally for us getting that communication line through, just because it's not an alcohol licence, it's still a real relevance. With regards to the incident itself, you're absolutely spot on as well. Again, it's just the minority spoil it for the majority, I'd have to say, but they spoiled it big time on that Friday evening, and I'm absolutely, I was fortunate that I did have an MCAT team that could be propelled in to that, and they were extremely robust in their approach, which I was grateful for. And I have to say, when I read it on the Saturday morning, a number of arrests, a number of real and unruly youths, And just to tell you, just regards the commitment of the CAT team, they identified that actually the shows were due to start again at 2 o'clock the next again day. Their shift was due to start at 6 o'clock the next again night, work 3 to 2. Every single one of them came out early, changed their shift at the drop of a hat to make sure that they had a visible presence at the shows at 2 o'clock to allow individuals to come there and enjoy themselves. And it's something that we will factor in to the future. And I know that the boss is big in terms of communications, in terms of publicise things. And it's sad to say, but certainly in future-wise, I want my CAT teams to be deployed there and taking pictures, and it'd be social media to be tweeting things out to say that they're on the ground. So if it's at Bonnyrigg, if it's at Dander Hall, wherever, to try and give some parents that wee bit reassurance that actually there's going to be a visible police presence at the showground. So didn't fear about your 12 or 13 year old going there. It's sad that it's came to that, but that's one of the bonuses that I see in terms of that community engagement role that the CATs have a particular element to play in.
Thanks, Kenny. Any other comments or questions? Councillor McCall.
Thanks, Chair. That's a really interesting point, Kenny, about using social media like that. I think that's a fantastic idea. Is the Twitter up and running? Is it?
Right. Yeah.
Twitter's disappeared off my iPad at the moment. I don't know why. I'm having huge IT problems at the moment, but I'll certainly check that out, because I think that is it's a great idea on the two fronts. You've got the reassurance for the family members, but also for the people who may think, you know,
absolutely,
going to cause a little bit of bother here. Yeah. Maybe not today.
Yeah, absolutely. Councillor Murnau.
Thanks, Mr Chairman. Yeah, I was absolutely disgusted at some of the behaviour I've seen at the shows when they came to Newton Grange. My house faces the park. I'm right in the centre of the street, so I've got a perfect view over the park. But it was that the amount of teenagers, maybe 13, 14, just not caring, just wandering about with drinking their hands like they were on holiday or something. Which takes us back to what we've spoke about before, is the issue of the, I don't want to say kids because they're not kids, the young people acquiring alcohol in the first place. Now, there's a strong dog walking community in Newton Grange. All the dog walkers, they all know each other. So if one person says something, then everyone will know. I had 4 cases of people coming to me saying they were intimidated by drunk youths in the park. So even me having to take the dog a walk, I was given abuse off some young folk for not going to the shop for cigarettes. Some of the things they said to me, I wouldn't like to think how that would make someone feel who isn't used to getting flack like that. What is it? I'm bringing it upon myself, but what is it that we're just not getting to stop these young people acquiring drink? We've done test purchasing, we've got strong fines, but there's something, I'm not trying to blame anyone, but there's something we're just not getting right to stop these young people from getting drinks. So I'd like to know, is there anything else we can do to make it harder for these young people to stop getting drinks?
$1 million question. If I knew the answer to that, I wouldn't have been the police, but no, I absolutely acknowledge it's a real difficult one for us. You're right, we have Challenge 25. We are in on and off sales premises every single weekend. It's routine business for us in there. I'm sure if you go into any off sales in particular, they'll tell you they're sick fed up of seeing the police going in and checking the records and things in there. There is an element of proxy purchase. There's no doubt whatsoever there's an element of proxy purchase. And we're about to embark over the next couple of months on the North Lanarkshire concept. You're asking for it, which is directly aimed at proxy purchase for it. But my own thought process is there's a lot of it still getting taken from home. Alcohol is readily available in most homes. And it's my hobby horse. I think I say it about every single scrutiny board that I've been here for the last 3.5 years. It's social responsibility lies at home. In terms of parents, carers, guardians, whatever it is, they have a massive part to play in terms of what their 12, 13, 14, sometimes as young as 9, 10-year-olds are doing at weekends. I'll no shy away from that. I go public with it all the time. Some people don't like hearing it, but that's ultimately, they have a significant part to play, particularly when they do come into contact with us and we do have to take them home, or we do have to make the phone call for them to come down to the station to pick up their son or daughter that's just been arrested and charged with an offence. They have a significant part to play in terms of curbing that. We can do every campaign. We can continually go back. I think licensees, in the vast majority of times, are wholly responsible individuals. It's their livelihood, and they're not going to risk their livelihood for a few bucks. But I do appreciate there is an element of proxy purchasing there, but I still am a firm believer that if they're not stealing it from home, they're stealing it from supermarkets.
Thanks, Kenny. Anyone else? Yep, Kieran.
Thanks. So we think proxy purchasing or nicking it for the shops or nicking it off mum and dad's one of the main sort of culprits, and the young people still acquiring it. That's great. Thanks for that. It gives me something to feed back to my community council, so obviously it's a big concern of theirs. One more question, and maybe it's one for education. When I was in fourth year, we were obliged to fill out anonymous surveys regarding alcohol. So what are you drinking, where did you get it from, etc. It was anonymous. Some of the data might have been skewed for people putting down silly answers, but it would give a good indication. Is that something that's still done in schools today, or is that something? Would that be a useful mechanism for collecting data to help us with the underage drinking sort of crisis we've got going on?
Yeah, it does go on. You're probably referring to the SALSA survey, it takes place every 2 years, which will show you the levels of young people. It's two different age brackets. I think it's one age between 13 and 15 and 15 plus, just in terms of how often they're drinking. And you're right, where are they actually getting the stuff from? If you actually look at the survey results, they'll tell you that things are improving. We'll let the community decide if that's the right answer or not. We're not seeing a huge improvement in it, but in terms of the survey wise, it's only as good as what people write down.
Thanks. Kevin.
Chair, sorry, just a note of interest. Clearly, we have the licence and over-provisioning policy being reviewed at the present time, as well as a licence and boards policy statement, and we're encouraging all residents to participate that, regardless whatever their status may be, as members or employees, as well as genuine residents and publicans of Mid Lothian. Certainly to take account of some of the points that have been debated this morning.
And that survey is available online as well, regarding over-provision. Councillor Muirhead.
Hi, we had a briefing a few weeks ago, all the elected members from Mid Lothian Drug and Alcohol Partnership, and one of the highlights for me was which I found it difficult to believe, was the massive reduction in drink being consumed by young people. I'm just wondering what the source of that was now, because you know it did strike me as being strange. Because I think I asked the question, well, why is that? Are they moving for drink to drugs? Because you know, but they say that there's quite a significant reduction in that as well. So, you know, I suppose when you're on the front, the sharp end, you're seeing it all the time, and some of your communities are seeing a more kind of dramatic, like behavioural issues in terms of youngsters that have had, or other people, I suppose, that have had drink. Then you feel it's getting worse. But certainly, the stats that were presented to elected members a few weeks ago suggested that the alcohol consumption by young people had decreased drastically over the last few years.
Councillor McCall.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, going back to what Councillor Munro was saying about we're doing test purchasing, we're not. If you look at the papers for PRS for tomorrow, it's one of the things that's off target. Just looking at the papers just now. Routine visits just met 20% of registered retailers' targets. However, no test purchasing has been able to take place, but maybe that's something that we can discuss at PRS tomorrow.
Thanks for that.
Thanks, Kenny.
Good morning again. Yeah, we've got a bit of a new look at things. We've been directed by the Surveillance Commission that test purchasing, as we would know it, where the young people go in with the supervised plainclothes officer, is potentially requiring directed surveillance. So that would require an authority to be progressed through the normal channels, very similar to, as we just discussed, about... And it's quite a process in terms of authorisation. It has to go through three stages. So it would be interesting to see what the impact on that is in the reality, because it's still a tactical option. However, it will take much more evidence and supporting information to enable the authorising officer, who has to be independent, can't be me, has to go somewhere else, to say, right, that's a justifiable and proportionate response to that. So I do think there's a bit of a challenge there. I'm trying to keep it as high on our agenda, because it's an option that in our area we used. Some areas don't go down that road, but I think we've got to be very careful. We lose that, or we don't keep the momentum up. It's just about getting the balance right.
Thank you. Kenny?
Yeah, I can also add there certainly has been test purchasing in Midlothian in my time up here. In fact, there have been several operations, and I can only think of one premises that failed. And then they actually passed the retest, because part of the process is we retest them again within a 14-day period. But it's in addition to the surveillance aspect of it as well, it's also difficult to recruit. They have to be between 16 and 16 and a half, so you have a very short window of time where you're operating with an individual. And certainly in Mid Lothian, we've struggled at times to get people to come forward. I don't know why. East Lothian seem to have a far greater, and that is actually in previous operations we've actually utilised test purchasers from East Lothian within the Mid Lothian area for it to allow us to have operations.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments? Kenny, is that licence an issue? I think it was an entertainment licence in regards to the one at Newton Grange. Has that been resolved?
Yeah, we're working with our colleagues within licensing and Midlothian Council to ensure that that doesn't happen again.
Excellent, thank you. Are you happy to move on?
Chair, do you wish me just to give you just in terms of indication-wise and figures, in terms of what what a normal police report would be, in terms of the key indicators, and we speak about in the new report, we're looking at the overall well-being of adults, and a key indicator was around about the number of missing person incidents for adults. In the last 12 months in the fiscal year, that dropped 4% from 149 incidents the previous year to 143. This year, so much of a likeness in there. 36 of the 143 had identified vulnerabilities, and 25 of these 143 were actually deemed as cared for adults. So that very highly vulnerable group in there plays a significant part in terms of the overall number of incidents there's been. Bogey workman crimes, a really positive story for this one. The figures fell from 15 crimes a year before down to 4 this year, a drop of 73%. This is one of the areas, I have to say, that in terms of Mid Lothian, I genuinely believe are one of the leads in Scotland in our approach to it. In terms of results for Operation Monarda, which is the sort of the national campaign, the levels of activity that take place within Mid Lothian in this particular area of business is first class. A lot of really good working with the trading standards. We also bring on board SEPA, DVLA. We go out, we actively go out into the communities where we're targeting what are identified as work vans, just checking that they're bona fide and keeping them on their toes. Of the 4 crimes of real significance to us, and it will be an interesting one how the court case progresses, but just a few months ago, we intercepted, and this was through works with the bank, a 71-year-old vulnerable female who was taken to the bank to withdraw a massive amount of money. The bill that had been given was £50,000. for it and had been driven to the bank to withdraw the funds. Thankfully, through all that ongoing work through Operation Manarda and working with financial institutions, we had a switched-on bank employee who twigged right away that it wasn't right, kept the old lady in and made the phone call, kept her occupied while we got down. So that's led to an individual, a charge being libelled against that individual that's currently sitting with the Procurator Fiscal for consideration. So a real positive story in there that we certainly saved the individual who'd already paid out £3,500, probably saved her £46,500. In terms of domestic abuse incidents, they fell last year from 1,030 to 978, which is a drop of 5%. We had a detection rate last year as well. It finished at 67.7%, so on all pretty healthy in regards to domestics. Heat incidents, they rose very slightly, up 4.9% from 81 incidents the previous year to 85 in the last year. Primarily, it was they were race-related against adults, so there was nothing of any massive significance in there or anything of massive concern in terms of individual groups being targeted. Antisocial behaviour incidents, overall, fell by 6% last year, which was a real turnabout for our first 6 months in, where we were sitting at one point, we were 15% over after the first quarter, to turn it about to be 6% under over a 12-month period. That saw the number of incidents falling from 6,745 the previous year to 6,340, which is a real good indicator in terms of the direction of travel for us. Drug supply, production and cultivation, as members will be aware, we struggled with this last year, and I said, you know, hopefully the introduction of the CAT team will see things improve. They have improved, because at one point we were down at 50%, down 50% from where we were the previous year. We finished the year just at 32% below, 53 people as opposed to 78 the previous year. But I can tell you already, in the first 2 months of this year, we're more than double what we were the previous year. So that level of activity has really picked up, and we're back in and working on real-time intelligence again. Housebreaking, it was a real positive story all of last year, and it continued to be right through to the year end. 46.1% down in terms of recorded housebreakings, reduction from 154 to 83. And I want to pay a huge amount of thanks to the work that we did with the community safety team in the lockdown crime campaign, real tireless campaign, and it certainly brought about dividends. The challenge for me will be trying to maintain that level this year, I have to say. Crimes of dishonesty, members will probably be aware, at one point we were sitting at over 20% above what we were the previous year. We finished the year at 3.3% above, moving from 2,330 the year before to 2,407. So we've seen that gap squeezing as that 12-month progressed, and I'm pretty confident we'll continue to do that just with the work that we're doing, preventative work around about the retail market. In particular, in trying to drive down shoplifting. We've seen a spike last year because we were actively encouraging them to come through. We're now seeing that prevention element kicking in and people working together with us. Violent crime, overall violent crime, it dropped 6.7% last year. Again, pleasing, from 74 to 69. It's still 69 crimes too many for me. However, it's going in the right direction. Albeit we didn't have a particularly good weekend this weekend with regards to that, but it's just a minor blip in what has been a really positive start to the first couple of months this year, I have to say. Road figures, really pleasing results in terms of road casualty figures. Fatalities dropped from 82, a drop of 75%. Serious injuries dropped from 39 to 34, a drop of 12.8%. Slight injuries dropped from 177 to 128, a drop of 27.7%. Overall, killed and seriously injured dropped 19.1% from 47 to 36. And children killed or seriously injured dropped from 5 to 2, a drop of 60%. So absolutely first-class figures in terms of addressing road casualties. And again, there's been a lot of work put into this in the number of different E's, whether that be education, enforcement, engineering or encouragement. My staff are heavily involved in that, and you'll see within the MCAT report that they play a significant part in that, and all my CBOs now as well are all trained in the handheld radar in terms of keeping on top of that. And we've had a significant increase in the deployment of the road safety camera units. They've now got a number of sites within Midlothian. When I arrived in Midlothian, they had none. They now have about half a dozen sites, and being based in Dalkeith, I get more than their fair share of their work. So that's a real, real positive picture, I have to say, in terms of road casualties. One area that does, and we speak about that 80-20 split, 20% crime and 80% the demand and everything else, and missing persons, particularly young people, is an issue for us every single day of the week. Last year we rose up a 14.8% increase, moved from 333 incidents to 391 incidents of missing children, of which 218 were classed as looked after children. That's individuals who are within young persons units who are most vulnerable, I have to say. And when a young, vulnerable individual goes missing, the level of resource and the priority that gets is significant for us. So this is a real area, an issue that we are working closely, both with education, with our colleagues within Midlothian Council, with the young persons units, to try and understand exactly what is the key factors behind a young individual going missing, the vulnerabilities, and what can we do collectively to try and reduce that number and ultimately reduce the risk to that young person. But overall, Chair and members, it's a pretty positive picture for the last 12 months within Midlothian, and I certainly have to thank my staff for their endeavours for that, because it's all about them. It's not about me and my partners, but probably most of all the community for the support that they give us.
Thank you very much, Kenny. Any other comments? Questions? Jim?
The high percentage of young people going missing that are in the looked after category, is that looked after in residential, or is it including looked after at home as well?
As you're aware, you've got the residential units, which account for a high percentage of that, but you also have individuals and foster carers as well. So it's an individual who's deemed to have a legally appointed guardian.
Is a high percentage of that the same individuals going missing time after time?
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
I mean, we can get you stats on that, but yeah, we do have what we call recidivists in there, individuals who continually go, but they are our most vulnerable. You know, ultimately, what's the catalyst, what's the driver for that individual not wanting to be there? Unfortunately, just because of their backgrounds, and they're within these because they have, you know, some vulnerabilities in any case, but them being exposed and being out and about overnight and things exposes them to greater dangers. And it's something, as an organisation, we really are keen to get on top of, and it's a huge resource. It's a massive amount of resources to get applied to missing people, particularly young people.
Because I'm just to be clear, I'm not suggesting that saying it's because it's, you know, a few individuals that's not important. It really is. You're right; they're the most vulnerable young people in society, and we have to protect them. I'm just trying to really get a handle on, you know, if that is the case or no. I did think it probably would be.
To give members some level of assurance, we work really, really closely with the Children and Families team within Midlothian, and also the Children's Reporter.
Thanks, Kenny. Any other comments or questions? Okay, Kenny, I know you will, but I take it retrospectively, once the report's ratified, will members get a copy?
Absolutely, I'll try and get that circulated as soon as I can.
Thank you. Are we happy to move on to 5.3, Scottish Fire and Rescue Service? Cleve.
Thank you, Chair. Just before I go into the Community Fire and Rescue Plan, there's just a couple of brief updates from a sort of national perspective for the Scottish Fire and Rescue Service. Some have been reported in the media and some possibly haven't. probably the biggest one for the organisation is the Chief has intimated that he will retire next March, and a national, possibly international campaign to recruit a new Chief will be coming out fairly soon, as far as I'm aware, but that advert has been worked up at this moment in time. Our national terms and conditions, which have gone to a ballot with the main trade union, have now been agreed after 5 years of fairly complex negotiations, and some of those terms and conditions are now in the process of being phased in over the coming months. Separate to that, the pay negotiations, which are very complicated and are still ongoing at a national level down south, and with that, the transformation journey that we are hoping to get underway is rolled into that as well. So that is, I suppose, ongoing is probably the best way to say where we are with that just now. On a really positive note, certainly from my perspective, is the training site, which I mentioned at the last meeting at Newbridge, is very much underway and, in fact, ahead of schedule. The steelwork for the main building is now completed. We'll have a world-class facility for training 1,600 firefighters a year in everything from real fire training to urban search and rescue, petrochem, a working at heights facility, silo, everything's going to be there. And for our firefighters in the east of Scotland and locally in the area of my responsibility, we will have on our doorstep a fantastic site at Newbridge. I think I reported it was £11 million worth. It's nearer £12 million now, but the bottom line is world-class facilities, some of which won't be replicated elsewhere in the UK. So quite a bit of interest and excitement. All the contractors are due to be off-site by next March, so we'll have that facility, parts of it, from December onwards, and I'll obviously keep the board updated as that progresses. And the last thing, briefly, was our national consultation on our transformation proposals, closed on the 14th of May, the results of which are being analysed by an external company, and when that is available and the report from that, I'll obviously bring that back to the board as well. And that was me on that. And the last thing, I brought this, the Community Fire and Rescue Plan for Midlothian 2018 to the last meeting. For me, I actually thought we'd approved it, but clearly we haven't. So happy to take questions on anything I've said, or indeed if there are any further questions around the plan, but I would like to submit the plan to the board for approval. Thank you.
Thanks, Steve. Yeah, I think there was some confusion around that. It was on the agenda for information. But, yeah, we've got the same plan before us today. Are members, any questions or comments? I'd be happy to send it to full council in June. I think it's the 29th of June at full council, which should be ratified. Yep. Okay. The quarterly report.
If there's no further questions on any of those areas, I'm going to hand over to Group Manager Mac, who's going to take you through the performance report. Thank you.
Yep. Good morning. Thank you. I'm going to take you to page 39 of your pack to look at the performance summary. And in the last year, it's actually a pretty pleasing figure for us in terms of the performance in this last year, particularly with accidental dwelling fires and casualties. The little table at the top of the page, we've improved fairly well in these two areas. As well as false alarms. The other areas we look at were slightly up on deliberate fires, excluding dwellings, and special service casualties. I'll not touch much on RTCs because Kenny's already done that, really. As far as the year's concerned, it was pleasing results for us in terms of our performance within Midlothian. I'll just touch briefly on a couple of the key areas. If we go to page 42 in your pack, You'll see overall throughout the year we only responded to 60 accidental dwelling fires, which is a decrease in 15 incidents from last year. We're below the Scottish average for accidental dwelling fires within the area, and we've been pretty stable really for about the last 5 years. Last year we were up quite significantly, but the last 5 years we've been pretty stabilised in this respect. 62% of them occurred in single occupancy households, with 30% being in over 65 bracket, and 75% of them were attributed to cooking. We still have a real problem with cooking in the home, particularly as a lot of these, as we start getting people ageing, we do tend to have more cooking fires in the home. We had a double fatality recently in East Lothian, and it was the same thing. It was an elderly couple cooking in the home and unfortunately couldn't get out of their house. So we are seeing that cooking, smoking was big at one stage, but cooking's making a real comeback, and particularly within the elderly people who have fires within their house. 75% of these properties had smoke detectors fitted, which meant that 92% of the fires we had were confined to room of origin within the property, which means people can get out quicker. There's not as much damage to the house, so people can move back into their house really quickly. Only two fires, the fire spread beyond the room of origin. And I think a lot of that, I've said this before, a lot of that is to do with the presence of smoke detection. On that, during the reporting period, we carried out over 1,000 home fire safety visits, fitting smoke detectors, etc. But within our home fire safety visits now, you'll be aware that we're looking at other things, other vulnerabilities in people, not just from fire, but from falling, from mental health issues. And we'll touch on that in a second. So pleasing in terms of accidental dwelling fires. Likewise, you reduce accidental dwelling fires, you tend to reduce casualties. So on the next page, we only dealt with 15 casualties and no fatalities in the entire year. Which was excellent, and you look at that over the last 5 year period, the table at the bottom, and down from 35 casualties 5 years ago to 15 casualties last year. It's quite a significant drop in those terms. Again, smoke detection. I think the fact that we're in people's homes, maybe a multi-agency approach to this, casualties are reducing. You do have the odd blip. I think in that last reporting year, I think we had 4 or 5 casualties at one fire, which is really unfortunate. So it could have been down in single figures, really, had we not had that. So it looks like the presence of smoke detectors is reducing that amount of casualties, and the fact the fires are going down. Deliberate dwelling fires. You look overall throughout the last year, although in the last 5 years this has been increasing, we're up by 25% activity in deliberate fire setting over the last 5 years. However, we had a real blip in quarter one of this last year, where actually it went through the roof, and it was quite a multi-agency approach to reduce the amount of secondary fire, deliberate fire setting within Mid Lothian. We seem to have got over that, and as the years moved on, we seem to have came in line with the Scottish average, which is pleasing to note. However, we still are seeing youths setting fire to things, sharing their experiences again, as Kenny was saying, on social media, and it's still causing us a real issue, particularly in terms of the things that they set on fire, like bins and road verges, etc. There is a cost to the council, and we continue to work with partners regularly through the TAC meetings to make sure that we try to keep deliberate fire setting as low as possible. Occasionally it does breach over into cars and garden sheds and things like that, but the majority of in Mid Lothian tends to be bins and verges, etc., woodland and things like that. We'll continue to work on that, and hopefully we won't get a spike again like we had in quarter one of this year. RTCs, I won't touch on that. Kenny covered us enough on that. Special service casualties on page 50. We attended 5 fatal and 48 non-fatal casualties last year. road traffic collisions, there was one fatal, 25 non-fatals for us, and for other types of incidents, such as medical responses, we had 4 casualties and 23 non-fatal casualties. We do expect that figure, not the RTC figure, but the other figure, to continue to rise as we start getting called out. We are increasingly getting called out to assisting agencies with getting access to houses or assisting with people who are suffering from heart attacks or other medical emergencies. That number is increasing, and we're happy to do that. And part, as Stevie says, part of the transformation agenda is for us to increase our work in that area. So you can see that figure going up. And the last page is unwanted fire alarm signals. We are below the Scottish average, and although we have crept up over the last 5 years, we're working hard to make sure that we don't continue to have repeat offenders and have fire engines hurtling through the community going to something they don't really need to go to. However, for every person, for every premises that that we fix, another one comes online. We do have a lot of businesses out there. We do have schools predominantly do cause us a little bit of an issue, and our community action teams work really closely with the head teachers and the schools to try and reduce that. But the children see the red little box and they do like to break them on occasions. So we'll continue the work in that area. But to be fair, we are below the Scottish average, so we're doing okay. And we are dealing with quite a few different businesses and giving them advice on how to deal with their automatic fire detection, how to make it better for them. So that's the report. I'll touch on the prevention and protection activities. Fire safety enforcement audits were slightly down last year, but that was due to having a new member of staff who has had to go through all the training and basically learn their apprenticeship, which means that the figures obviously drop with that respect. Member of the team down who's just learning, but hopefully that will pick up this year. Home fire safety visits. As always in Midlothian, we perform way, way, way above a lot of areas in Scotland in the fire service in terms of the amount of home fire safety visits we actually carry out and the amount of smoke detectors we fit. And hopefully that's will continue to reflect in the amount of dwelling fires and casualties from dwelling fires that we actually have. As far as other partnerships work is concerned, we continue as a multi-agency approach to work with to engage with the youth within Midlothian and ensure that we continue to look at the preventative activities to help them understand the issues that are causing. We are actively looking at our safeguarding, how we've began to refer adults at risk. That's due to through our Living Safely in the Home project, where we're actually looking at things like falls, mental health issues, and we are starting to refer vulnerable people to the other partners. You'll see from the referral section, we are getting referrals in from partners as well. I'll always say this, could be higher. We've not got a great deal there throughout the year, but it is getting better. Every time we come here, those figures are going up, and that's all we can ask, that the figures keep increasing. I will say from the fire in East Lothian, we did realise when we had a case conference on it that the people were actually known to other agencies, known to be at risk. However, they hadn't forgotten to tell us, you know, that there was a potential fire risk. They'd forgotten to tell the fire service. So can we learn from these things? Absolutely. Do we need this figure to go up? Absolutely, we need this figure to continue to rise to make our people safe within Midlothian. But we are increasing that all the time. And our work, like I say, our work continues in schools and will continue in the coming years, I'm sure, in schools. And that's it. Thank you very much. I'll take any questions.
Thanks very much, Dean. Again, similarly, a lot of positive stats in there. Any questions or comments? Give us some call.
Thank you, Chair. I'd like to ask about the cooking. So, and I remember there used to be the information adverts about, you know, don't put the chip pan on and then go to sleep and with a fag in your hand. Is it still chip pans, or is it people putting things on to cook and forgetting all about it? Is that a mixture? Do we have more information about that, please?
Yep, it is a mixture. We are still, the recent fire in East Lothian was a chip pan. And that is, but it is a mixture of food being left on the cookers. It's not just chip pans. Although chip pans, we've done a lot of work on this recently with Dementia Scotland, and when people who have dementia start getting to a certain age, they can go back to times in their life when, for example, they used to cook chips on a chip pan. And because more people are living in home, we may see an increase in that respect. But it isn't just chip pans, but they are making a bit of a comeback. But when you've got other agencies that are in people's houses, that's the type of information we want. You know, if someone from a healthcare person is in the house and they see a person with dementia has a chip pan, we should really be taking action in that respect. And that's the type of information that when we do training with the social work teams, etc., that's the type of things we're putting over. So we need to know that information and we need to start taking steps to sort it out. But it's not just chip pans. I wish it was as simple as that. We could rectify it. But it is people forgetting that they've left things on the cookers. Okay.
Councillor Smale.
The usual question from Midlothian East, this 100 deliberate fires we had last year. Now, the direction of travel on the graph is looking very healthy, but it might also indicate that in the summer weather in the first quarter, this is when the gangs like to go out into the scrubland and start fires and put them on their iPhones. I just wonder if you've got any more up-to-date data from the recent couple of weeks of sunny times.
No, I've not got any up-to-date. Overall, we get our stuff comes through quarterly. But what we do through the TAC group is weekly they are looking at what has happened in that previous week. They look at the information and we start targeting areas. If we ever see that there is a pattern emerging, then we take immediate action. As a partnership approach, we take immediate action to dealing with that. And that forms many ways. It forms the police do active. They'll do patrols around the area. We'll go out and we're working quite a lot in the different areas, like the Y2K project, with doing a lot of youth engagement. And we ramp that up as we start coming into the summer. Not just in that, that's one example, with Burnswell. And anything that comes, any patterns that emerge on a weekly basis or any hotspots, we take direct action towards that. But we also are in the schools at this time of year to make sure that we teach them the way to behave with fires, like if they're wild camping and they're setting fires. So we're teaching them fire safety message and also telling them about the issues that causes if they set fires. So we're doing everything we can do. I wish we could do more. I wish we could stop it, but they seem to like having fires. And it's the same right across. It's not just Mid Lothian. Stevie lives in Dunbar and East Lothian, and you're having issues down there as well, aren't you? It is quite a common thing as we start getting into this warmer period in the summer.
Just one thing to add to that, the very most up-to-date figures, which literally came through sometime early this morning. Scottish Borders, Mid and East Lothian was the only area in the east of Scotland that have not had any secondary fires over the last 24-hour period. Now, we don't often see a zero in there, particularly over the weekends, but it was this morning. So that's, in terms of the answer to your question, the most up-to-date figure from the weekend, and it was sitting as a zero. Now, OK, it's maybe not the driest weather we've had, but certainly that, for me, is quite a positive to see that, because it doesn't happen very often.
Maybe they're nursing their hangovers.
Councillor Muirhead.
Hi, Dean. I was going to ask this question. You might have answered it. I just didn't quite catch the end of it. On page 44 with the fire casualties, welcoming the decrease, great, 35 down to 15. The one that sticks out is the Midlothian South one, going from 5 to 9. Was that the one you were referring to when you said there was 4 to 5 casualties in the one area? Right, that explains it. That's fine. The other thing I just wanted to touch on as well was the deliberate fires, and you mentioned that, can have a significant effect on council properties and things like that. It also has significant effects on community facilities as well, and it's quite disturbing to see that the individual who set fire to the Beacon project in Gorebridge, causing £500,000 worth of damage, didn't get a custodial sentence. Now, I don't want to rush to judgment on that because I don't know the background, but that's unfortunate as well, because, to be honest, I was up there that morning and I want answers as to why anybody would do that at the middle of the night, come there specifically, deliberately, to set fire to a community building that the community has struggled to get the finance together to build, and that has definitely, without a doubt, put that in jeopardy to some extent. I mean, we'll hopefully get it sorted out, but, it's set that back, and it's caused all sorts of problems on top of the £500,000 worth of damage in terms of community confidence in the project, if nothing else. Firefighters putting their lives at risk in terms of dealing with that at the time, because if the firemen had done what they could have done when they came out there that day and just stepped back and just controlled it for the outside, we wouldn't have had anything left. But they actually went into the building and they fought the fire. And I'm dismayed that has resulted in somebody not getting a custodial sentence for what was a massive crime against a vulnerable community. I just feel I had to say that because it's just pretty sad.
Thanks, Jim. I'm not sure we can really comment on that. Any other questions or comments? Okay, does that conclude business today then? Next meeting is 27th of August. Thank you.